Corruption will be the big issue in Korean domestic politics the next couple of years. It's just got to be fixed.
South Korean prosecutors seek a detention warrant for a former president. It's Tuesday, March 28th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington, inviting you to join us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, South Korea and Vietnam seek each other's help. Asia and the world deal with fake products. New Zealand is on the move. And touch felt around the world. We're in touch with you right now on VOA Asia. South Korean prosecutors say they are seeking an arrest warrant against ousted President Park Geun-hye, who became the country's first democratically elected leader to be removed from office following her impeachment. The 65-year-old Park, who is denied wrongdoing, was impeached by Parliament in December and officially removed by the country's constitutional court earlier this month. Her executive immunity was taken away, and she was questioned for 14 hours by prosecutors last week after being implicated in a corruption scandal. Pusan University Associate Political Science Professor Robert Kelly tells VOA's Victor Beatty the drama has pointed out the persistent problem of corruption, but has not produced a crisis climate in South Korea.
I think there's a lot of embarrassment at the level of corruption that's been revealed. Analysts, people like me who sort of do this stuff in Korea, have been arguing for years that Korea has a major corruption problem. The IMF has said this to Korea since the 1990s. That's now been, I think, fully revealed, and I believe that corruption will be the big issue in Korean domestic politics the next couple of years. It's just got to be fixed. I mean, it's brought down the president. But I don't think there's a crisis. I actually think Korea's institutions actually worked quite well. She was replaced without violence on the streets. There were big demonstrations. Nobody got killed. There was no cars flipped over and burned that didn't turn into Arab Spring. I think this is actually a model of what democratic impeachment ought to look like.
Robert, she's denied any wrongdoing, but could you briefly summarize exactly what she stands accused of?
From what I understand, and it's gotten really, really tangled, actually, so we're all a little bit over our head. My understanding is that she had a friend, whose name was Chae-sun Cheol, who used her relationship with the president to shake down corporations for money to be sent to Che's foundations and NGOs. Many people apparently think these foundations are basically slush funds set up by Che, and she used her connections to the president to push companies to give to those foundations. And the big turning point, as I understand it, of the impeachment was the question of whether or not Park Geun-hye herself knew of Che's behavior. And apparently the Constitutional Court agreed that she did. Now it goes in front of an even tougher court, right, a criminal court where the standards are even higher.
She was interrogated or questioned, if you will, last week for some 14 hours by prosecutors. And they issued a statement Monday saying the case is very grave. What do you make of that?
She was removed by the Constitutional Court, right, which means she's almost certainly corrupt. I mean, that's still sort of out there. There's still debate about this. There are people who still support her. But, you know, my sense is that she did this. The Constitutional Court voted 8-0. It was unanimous. They threw out some of the charges against her, but on the core ones, sort of corruption and meddling in state affairs by her friend, she was impeached.
Robert, there's a larger issue here. Of course, there's going to be a new election. It is possible, I understand, that a leftist coalition may come to power. This could alter North Korea policy.
Yes, it could. And that's probably the biggest shift that the left takes over. I think there's a pretty strong consensus now domestically that corruption is an issue. I think whoever wins probably will be faced with that. Traditionally, I think the biggest division between South Korean left and right parties has been over North Korea. I think internally, domestically, there's actually a consensus here about sort of state involvement in the economy. It's not like back home in the U.S. But it's really, I think, on North Korea that they really split. The last time the left ran the country, had what was called the Sunshine Policy of engagement and outreach and accommodation to North Korea. The left has talked about bringing that back.
A hearing on the arrest warrant is set for Thursday. A new election to replace Park is tentatively set for May 9th. These are among some of the top Asia stories that are trending on voanews.com. Bangladesh Army kills four insurgents and ends a four-day standoff. 8 people dead in Japanese avalanche. South Korea prosecutors seek detention warrant for ousted President Park. Hong Kong set to arrest protest leaders. Taiwan tapping the United States and itself for new weapons. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. We continue now with VOA Asia. For nations that have relations with North Korea, interactions can quickly become complicated. Vietnam and South Korea have sought each other's help as top diplomats met this week to discuss some issues that involve Pyongyang. VOA Vietnamese reporter Trung Nguyen joins us with more on how they're reacting to North Korea's nuclear and missile tests and how the murder of Kim Jong-un's half-brother also plays into Vietnam's direct ties with the North.
Vietnam and North Korea have over the time fostered friendly and maybe camaraderie friendship because the two countries have a similar political system. And also Vietnam have aided North Korea with lots of rice over the years. So quite close, actually. But due to some developments over the last few months, including the killing of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and the alleged involvement of Doan Thi-heung, a Vietnamese citizen, that have shed a spotlight on the relations.
Obviously, there's concern about the nuclear tests and missile launches as well. So I understand top diplomats from Vietnam and South Korea have gotten together to talk about this.
Yes, they met in Hanoi during the visit by the South Korean foreign minister to Vietnam 2 days ago. They met in Hanoi. The issue of North Korea came up during the talks, including the missile test, the thrust engine test, and also the case of the Vietnamese citizen involving in the killing of Kim Jong-nam. But those topics were covered in South Korean press, but not on Vietnamese press. It's not surprising to me because North Korea and all that activities are very sensitive to Vietnam, and Vietnam media is controlled by the government. They're all state-owned, so I'm not very surprised.
And of course, Vietnam having relations with Pyongyang, South Korea, a different story.
Yes, that's why South Korea raised those issues with Vietnam. Seoul regime is trying to gather pressure on Kim Jong-un, maybe, because of the close ties between the two countries. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they want to get Vietnam involved in piling the pressure on Pyongyang. But actually, I talked to the chairman of the Vietnam and North Korea Friendship Association, and he told me that the relationship between the two countries is in a sensitive stage right now, and Vietnam wants to keep it low profile. They don't want to get close to North Korea due to all kind of activities that Pyongyang have conducted.
While South Korea is seeking perhaps some help from Vietnam in the relations with North Korea, Vietnam is seeking help from South Korea in the South China Sea issues and disputes.
That's right. So apart from those topics that related to North Korea, Vietnam asked South Korea to support it in the issue of South China Sea. Vietnam is involved in the maritime dispute with China and other countries. So it's trying to get support from anyone and any country possible to make the case. And because of the fact that South Korea is among the big trade partners of Vietnam, so that's why they try to get all kind of support from South Korea.
It's a great story about how diplomacy works between two nations and how both nations try to get help from the other side for different issues and common issues.
Yes, that's right. And actually, the issue of the Vietnamese citizen in the killing of Kim Jong-nam is evolving because Yonhap, the South Korean news agency, this morning reported that the son of a North Korean diplomat was involved in the killing, and that guy lived in Vietnam for over 10 years and could speak Vietnamese fluently. And he was the one who lured the Vietnamese suspect into the killing. But of course, VOA Vietnamese service couldn't confirm the report, but Yonhap news agency quoted different sources as saying so.
It's fun to watch the diplomacy between nations, and we're glad to have wonderful relations with Trung Nguyen of our Vietnamese service. Thank you so much for telling us about this story.
Thank you.
Happening now in Asia, Myanmar's army chief has defended a military crackdown in Rakhine State after the United Nations pledged to probe claims security forces carried out a campaign of killing and torture against Rohingya Muslims. Almost 75,000 Rohingya have escaped to Bangladesh after the military launched operations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're always thrilled to have you with us on VOA Asia. The global trend in counterfeiting and piracy is forecast to increase during the decade, with China at the heart of production of fake goods from clothes to electronics and risky fake medicines and cosmetics. Governments and businesses are now looking to challenge the commercial threats posed by counterfeiting with steps to detect fake goods and protect brands and jobs. A report commissioned by the International Trademark Association and the International Chamber of Commerce said the global economic value of counterfeiting and piracy could reach $2.3 trillion by 2022. The February report by the research firm Frontier Economics said the wider social investment and criminal enforcement costs could take that total to $4.2 trillion and risk about 5.4 million legitimate jobs. Australia-based product security firm YPB Group Executive Chairman John Houston says the problem of counterfeiting essentially is in China.
The Chinese counterfeiter can now copy the best packaging. They can they actually put holograms on things that the original brand owner doesn't have a hologram on to create the aura of authenticity. So what you need is traceable, identifiable, authenticatable technology in products, and you would be absolutely amazed how little of that there is in the world.
A recent report by the UN Office on Drugs and Crime says counterfeit goods and fraudulent medicines pose a serious risk to public health and safety. Deaths, injuries, and sickness have been reported as a result of fake automotive supplies, chemicals, pesticides, consumer electronics, electrical components, food, drink, and agricultural products. The UNODC and the World Customs Organization estimate 75% of counterfeit products seized worldwide in 2010 were manufactured in East Asia and most of those in China. In December, the United States placed China's $270 billion e-commerce powerhouse Alibaba Group on a counterfeit goods watch list. YPB Group Executive Chairman John Houston says online markets are a prime channel for fake goods, putting a big strain on sellers.
The online retailers are going to have to do something about counterfeit coming into their online platforms because they provide a refund to the customer at the moment. And again, there's not enough control over the authenticity of products going into that supply chain.
Alibaba has called on China's authorities to introduce tougher laws with stricter enforcement and penalties. Steps by Alibaba include the removal of 380 million product listings and the shutdown of 180,000 Taobao stores and 675 operators as a result of anti-counterfeiting measures. Our thanks to Ron Corbin in Bangkok for bringing us this story. You're listening to VOA Asia.
News happens around the clock. And VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Asia markets are hoping to rebound after starting the week mostly lower amid rising doubts over U.S. President Donald Trump's ability to pass legislative reforms. The Japanese benchmark Nikkei 225 dropped nearly 1.5% Monday. Shares of Toshiba down 2%. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues as new data is showing parts of New Zealand's South Island moved several meters closer to the North Island during last November's 7.8 magnitude earthquake. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports as he moves us closer to the story.
The data, including satellite radar imagery,
shows that parts of New Zealand's South Island have shifted more than 5 metres closer to the North Island, and that some areas were raised by up to 8 metres. Other information has come from observations on the ground and the analysis of coastal regions by GNS Science, a New Zealand government research agency. The tremor ruptured a swathe of land almost 200 kilometres long. GNS has published the first of 10 papers on the powerful quake last November in the international journal Science. Two people were killed when the magnitude 7.8 earthquake struck, and the tourist town of Kaikoura was cut off by landslides. Ian Hamling is the lead author of the research paper. He says the shifting of the earth in New Zealand occurred when powerful seismic forces pulled the ground in different directions.
Kind of like a shearing, so I guess the classic that people always think of is in a San Andreas style fault, where you get the two sides of the fault zone move in opposite directions. And so that's what we see, is that parts of the inland Kaikoura up to Cape Campbell have gone to the northeast, and then some areas to the south of that have gone in the opposite direction.
The earthquake struck last November northeast of the city of Christchurch. It was felt in the New Zealand capital Wellington on the North Island, 200 kilometres away. Christchurch is still recovering from a devastating 2011 earthquake that killed 185 people and destroyed the city centre. New Zealand is known as the Shaky Isles. The South Pacific nation lies on the unpredictable Ring of Fire that circles almost the entire Pacific Rim. Each year, more than 15,000 earthquakes are recorded in New Zealand, but only about 150 are large enough to be felt. The research paper led by GNS included the work of 29 co-authors from 11 national and international institutes, such as the NASA laboratory in California and the University of Leeds in Britain. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Developing at this hour in Asia, a Singaporean couple have been jailed for starving their domestic worker from the Philippines in a case that has shocked the city-state. The woman lost about 40% of her body weight while working for the couple and was given only bread and instant noodles to eat. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, imagine from your home in Asia performing complex and real-time tasks like surgery or teaching or manufacturing in places like Europe, Africa, or the United States. Intricate skills that require a sense of touch. Some scientists say the next generation of optical and wireless technology could allow people to digitize their abilities and do their jobs from anywhere in the world. VOA's Elizabeth Lee tells us how this idea was demonstrated at the Optical Fiber Communication Conference and Exhibition in Los Angeles.
What happens when music is combined with technology?
Kids or anybody could learn how to play the piano really properly from the best musicians in the world.
Wireless communications professor Misha Doler's aim is to build a database that records the movements of the piano player's hand with the help of this special sensing glove. That data can then be used to help a student wearing another glove.
You could imagine these so-called exoskeletons, which you put on your hands. It will pressurize the hands and the joints, and it will move it gently at the beginning and nudge essentially the body into the right shape and in the right way of moving your hand.
This is Doler's vision of what he calls the Internet of Skills can do.
We use digital today to negotiate for jobs, right? So we use LinkedIn, emails, etc. But then to execute the work, we still need to drive, we need to fly, we need to walk. So I was thinking, could we virtualize it? Could we digitize skills?
Another application for the Internet of Skills is healthcare. Motivated by the Ebola crisis in Africa, Doler is trying to develop a way for doctors to treat a patient thousands of miles away, especially in remote areas where medical skill is lacking. He says virtual reality and low-cost technology can link the doctor and patient.
What I'm trying to do is, first of all, give Proka or the surgeons back the feeling of touch so he feels what he does inside the body. And second thing is, I want him to be able to have this console somewhere in another hospital. So the only thing we're doing is the cable between the console and the patient, make it longer and make it an internet.
But it's only possible if large amounts of data can travel very quickly. Companies are already developing hardware to move information faster.
It all came about with video. The way we view content today is very different from the way we viewed it before. And getting content to everybody, whether it's on their iPhones or their Android devices or on their PCs everywhere, takes the underlying network.
More new networks these days that transport and transmit growing amounts of data are being built by private networks, says Cisco's Eve Grilicus.
Everybody has a stake in the game now. The other step is as we're opening up the networks and creating the sort of open source society in the networking area, it allows people to build on it.
As technology continues to catch up with what the brain can imagine, Dohler envisions the Internet of Skills democratizing labor in about 10 years, just as the Internet has already made knowledge available to all. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
It's amazing what you can do from anywhere in the world. We've been reaching the entire world for 75 years in real time. And we thank you for listening today to VOA Asia. Be sure to check us out on Facebook at VOA Asia as well. And if you like, download our podcast and take the program wherever you go. Our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Daryl Smith, and our Managing Editor Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Steve Miller and Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Sometimes a relatively simple surgical procedure can make a world of difference to women who suffer from a seemingly insurmountable health problem that too often ruins their chance of living normal, productive lives. Such is the case of women who live with an obstetric fistula. About 2 million women, most of them living in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia, suffer with this devastating internal injury caused by a difficult, prolonged childbirth. The condition, which can be prevented through proper medical care during childbirth, is a clear indication that health systems are failing women. That's because, although it is both treatable and preventable, this condition continues to plague the poorest women around the world. Its effect on women is devastating. Those who are afflicted with a fistula are frequently ostracized by their communities and even their families. Indeed, too often, they are neglected or even deserted by their husbands. In Bangladesh, some 71,000 women suffer from obstetric fistula, and each year, another 2,000 or so new cases occur. 13 medical centers in the country perform the surgical operation that rectifies the problem. But their turnover is woefully inadequate. Each medical center is able to surgically correct only about 1,000 cases each year. The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, has partnered with the U.S. Department of Defense to help eliminate this problem in Bangladesh. Last November, the two agencies ran a program that helped increase the number of Bangladeshi medical personnel capable of treating women who suffer from this condition. A group of Bangladeshi medical students took an intensive course in fistula repair and prevention, which was presented by medical personnel from the U.S. Army Pacific Command's Regional Health Command Pacific, surgeons from the Tipler Army Medical Center, and USAID health officers. This effort helps advance U.S. Pacific Command and Regional Health Command Pacific's mission to prevent disease and improve the health of systems and individuals across the Asia-Pacific, said Brigadier General Bertram Providence, Commanding General of Regional Health Command Pacific. Together, we can help Bangladeshis have access to basic or specialized medical care. Together, we can give thousands of Bangladeshi women a new lease on life.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.